Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 90. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is the true talent of Screen Geeks.
Ethan, you are loved, sir.
So humble.
Indeed. And that's why everyone likes you so much. Everyone is I don't know what the heck I was going to say. Okay, Melissa couldn't make it today. That's what I was going to say. Ethan saying he was the true talent of Screen Geeks made me think this.
It's time to put the ice pack back in my pants.
And now I'm good to go. That was just kind of wrong to do. But let's start off with what we've watched this week, and then we'll be getting into all kinds of news, releases, and we have DVD reviews from before the thing even releases. Woohoo.
Excellent.
So yes, let's talk about what we watched this week. Ethan, do you want to kick us off?
Why not?
I know we're putting the burden on you right off the top of the show.
Okay. I watched a lot this week, so I got a lot to talk about. I finally saw Three Kings.
Oh, cool.
I thought it was awesome. It's actually something I really liked about it was how much of an action movie it was. I actually didn't really expect it to have that many set pieces, and yeah, it was a really fun movie and really awesomely written. And it's interesting seeing kind of how much of a humanist movie it really is about the value of just human life when you consider David O. Russell and how much of a
Yeah.
Anyway, I saw Deliverance.
Oh, wow.
No. Squeal like a pig.
Yeah.
Did it make you appreciate the South Park episode even more?
Yeah. Some reason... Wait, I can hear myself talking right now.
Uh-oh. Try it again.
It was actually a little different than I expected because for some reason I knew that that Otis from the Superman movies was going to get, diddled. But for some reason, I thought that after that it was supposed to be like a hillbillies versus big town folks kind of movie, them just fighting each other off. But it was something different. But I thought it was a very interesting movie, a good one. I watched American Movie, the documentary.
Oh, I love that film.
Yeah, it's funny, that guy. He's such just like. Just the things he says are obviously pretty hilarious, but by the end of the movie, you really do just care about him and want him to succeed. And I thought that was a pretty tremendous feat when you consider just how ridiculous he really is.
Yeah. Mark Burchard. Yeah. I've always remembered that guy. Yeah. I know a few people who have autographed copies of Colvin, his movie.
Everyone else calls it Coven, but I don't want it that because it sounds like oven.
Have you seen this, Dave?
I have not.
Oh, you'll love it. You'd love it. It's one of the best documentaries, period. I love American Movie.
I've got Roger and Me coming in my Netflix queue, the next shipment.
Oh, cool.
So,
very good.
Yes.
I scratched Nosferatu off my list of shame.
Very good. What'd you think?
Man, Platinum Dunes needs to get on that shit. Get like Jackie Earle Haley as Dracula and Shia the Beef as Jonathan and Megan Fox as Mina. That would be so good. And like get the guy like directed a few Shakira music videos to do it and stuff.
And then you should make a double feature with, was it Shadow of the Vampire?
Ah, yeah.
That's the closest. I haven't seen Nosferatu proper, but I saw that. It was kind of mind-blowing.
Did you, Ethan, when you saw it, did it have, because there are different versions of it, did you see the one that has like the silent version? There's one where they have like a heavy metal soundtrack accompanying it.
I saw one that had like kind of a weirdly jazzy score at times.
Huh.
It was on, actually, that's a funny thing about it. I had always wanted to see it, and I put it on my my zip queue and it, like near the top, it never got sent. But then it just dawned on me that the movie is public domain, and I could watch it on Google Video. So, yeah.
There you go.
Anyway, I saw Rio Bravo.
Oh, great.
I posted this on Twitter, but more Westerns need gratuitous musical numbers.
Well, hey, Blazing Saddles has one. So,
it does. Yeah, a good one.
And last thing I watched the original The Thing from Another World.
Oh, great. Howard Hawks.
He just produced it, but yeah. Which I enjoyed, but the John, while watching it, I was saying, before I watched it, I was like, okay, I'm gonna, I'm not going to compare it to the John Carpenter one, just to be fair to it. But throughout the movie, I just kept thinking, oh, this was different, or it was like this. And it's kind of unfair because Carpenter's The Thing is like one of my favorite movies, and I've seen it so many times. But though I guess the biggest flaw with this one is that there's like a chick in it. Like the best thing about Carpenter's version is that it's an all-male cast. Can't go wrong with that.
Kind of like Glengarry Glen Ross. And I'm leaving the secondary joke out of it.
Yeah. See, I got to get that woman out of there. Yeah.
There you go. That's Ethan at ScreenGeeks.com. All right, Barry, what did you get to watch this week? Past 2 weeks, I guess. You know,
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of my favorite months of the year because of Halloween. And this was the time of the year when Josh and I would always start to watch horror films. So I immediately began my horror movie kick. Went back and started with Stuart Gordon's Reanimator, which I really love. It gets better every time I see it. I really enjoy that film. Stephen King's Maximum Overdrive, which is terrible, terrible, terrible. much worse than I remember. The original, The Blob, which was okay.
The one with Steve McQueen?
Yeah, with Steve McQueen, yeah.
It's campy, but it's fun.
Yeah, all the stuff with The Blob is great. Whenever the focus is on those knuckleheaded teenagers or those stupid cops, forget it. But whenever it's like The Blob in the movie theater or The Blob at the doctor's office, I really liked it.
What was funny was every time it got to Steve McQueen, you could tell he was like, what the heck am I doing here?
Yeah, it's weird too because he's billed as Stephen McQueen, but his character is Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway. But yeah, so I think I like the remake just a little bit better, actually. But
I've got the Criterion.
Ooh. Nice. That's a good Criterion.
Why, I don't know. But
oh, it's a classic movie. John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness, which I've always loved.
Oh, love it.
Love that. Yeah, one of my favorites.
Love it.
Yeah. I got to say, though, the commentary was disappointing. It's just Carpenter and the cinematographer. It's a lot of technical details about the lighting, how the film was shot. And no question, you really appreciate the technical aspect of the movie once you hear it. But it's not fun. It's, you know, it's not what you expect from a John Carpenter commentary. So I was a little disappointed with the commentary, but awesome movie.
Did you notice the Hayden Christensen cameo?
No, I heard he was in it. Where is he in the movie?
He's like the paper boy or something.
Oh, okay. Is he like one of those creepy kids in Hobbs End or?
No, he's like, it's just like a 5 second thing. He's like, who's the lead? Is it James Woods?
It's Sam Neill.
Sam Neill, he like says to Sam Neill, it's like, what are you doing, mister, or something like that. But
okay, well, great excuse for me to go back and watch it again. Hey, excellent. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, which is pure camp, stupid, but you know, kind of like Elvira herself, kind of really tacky but undeniably enjoyable. I think it was Ethan who recommended this, the Paul Lynn Halloween special.
What?
No, it was either you or Billy Flynn. It must have been Billy Flynn. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I didn't think we were that interchangeable, but
No.
Dang.
It was like over a year ago. I'm sorry. I just forgot. I don't have the two confused. No. It was Billy. The Paul Lynn Halloween special with, let's see, Margaret Hamilton, the Wicked Witch of the West from Wizard of Oz. Who else? Tim Conaway, Kiss in their TV debut. Really awful, but really fascinating. It really is like a Halloween, like Star Wars holiday special. Terrible, but I got to say, a must-see for horror fans. I'm almost done here. Qui-Don, the Japanese horror anthology film. It's available on Criterion.
Yeah.
Magnificent. It's like a Kurosawa horror film. It is freaking awesome. It's one of the best movies I think I've seen. Just amazing. Absolutely amazing. And let's see, the film Nightmares with the anthology horror movie with Lance Henriksen and Emilio Estevez. A lot of fun. Not great, but fun. And finally, I managed to get caught up on some of those Masters of Horrors episodes. Okay. I did see Cigarette Burns.
Which, is that just crazy?
It's crazy, but it was brilliant. Yeah. Brilliantly written. Great story.
It was written by Moriarty from
Drew McQueenie.
Not currently at Ain't It Cool News, but...
Yeah, great story. I mean, it's imaginative and really interesting. Because, I mean, on one hand, it was really extreme and disgusting. But the movie was commenting on that and how horror films affect people. And, yeah, really great stuff. And I saw John Landis's Dear Woman, which is hilarious. So freaking funny. And I love that these movies are only 1 hour long because it's like it's totally fat-free. They get strict to the point. It's like it feels like 60 minutes is just right for these movies.
So, very cool.
So I'm definitely going to go back and watch some more.
Right on. Well, if anyone's been following me on Twitter or Facebook, speaking of Facebook, by the way, if you search on Screen Geeks Radio, you can join like the Facebook group. And we'll start
do like, it.
We'll start letting people vote on what directors we cover next. I think next we're going to do John Carpenter. Cool. Just because it's Halloween. Let's How do we not do
Let's
that?
Let's do it. I thought we were going to do Wes Craven for Halloween.
Are we going to do Wes Craven?
Are we doing Wes? We
do Wes. Doesn't matter. That works too. Doesn't matter to me. Wes Craven's probably a little more horror.
That's true.
Yeah. But yeah, and if we get over like 100 people join, we get to like name the page after Screen Geeks, which is kind of cool. Like
you go to
facebook.com/Screen Geeks. That'd be cool.
Let's do it.
So yes,
do it.
We've got 37 people now, which is very cool. No, not in a row. Okay. Why am I on a Kevin Smith kick lately? Okay. I have started working at Hollywood Video part-time, just for the heck of it, partially to make some extra funds to fund the site, and partially to so we can get DVDs early and do some reviews. Last week, I saw two of the movies before they came out. That was Alien Trespass and The Girlfriend Experience. Alien Trespass, there's a reason they didn't show up to Starfest.
Oh, no.
It's not awful, but it's not as campy, goofy fun as it should have been.
Ah.
Like, it's trying to be like, hey, we're going to make a campy, goofy movie, but we're taking it completely seriously. Not tongue-in-cheek, not... And that could be done right if it's written funny, but it wasn't.
So it's not even on the level of, like, Mars Attacks.
Oh, no. No, not at all.
Mm.
I didn't think so. It's kind of like The Blob.
Oh.
The original. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah. That's what made me think of it. The Girlfriend Experience, however, has made me respect Soderbergh on a whole new level.
Cool.
Alien Trespass had, like, a couple special features that sucked. Doesn't really matter. Blah, blah. The Girlfriend Experience DVD should be taken as an experience, because after you watch the movie, you should absolutely listen to the commentary. Sasha Grey knows her movie stuff, because it opens up, the commentary opens up with Soderbergh talking about how much he hates doing these and they're boring and they're pointless. And first thing out of her mouth, well, have you listened to the John Carpenter ones? Because those are great. Like this woman is awesome.
She's our people.
Yes. I thought the acting was good. You know, it's a very unique film. It's very interesting. If you're, you know, a little more adventurous moviegoer. And the thought of having a movie starring an adult film actress without any nudity makes you interested. Definitely check it out.
She got naked. Didn't she get naked? I can't remember.
She does have a nude scene, yeah.
Does she?
Maybe I'm just thinking of all the other movies I've seen her in.
She has a brief full frontal nude scene where she walks naked in front of the camera. It's dimly lit, but there it is.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And there's the unrated version, I guess, which has
And I watched that's the cut that I watched, and okay. There was barely anything in it.
Huh. Oh, well.
It's very interesting.
Well, it's not that kind of movie.
Yeah, he said he wanted to make an entirely different cut for the quote-unquote alternate cut.
Gotcha.
And then I also watched Nerdcore Rising, which, if you're curious about nerdcore hip-hop, this is the movie for you. It's a fun movie. It actually, instead of it being like this documentary about the beginning of this new startup branch of hip hop, it has more to do with MC Frontalot, the guy who founded it, and him going on his first tour. And yeah, it was really cool. It's a lot of fun to listen to. Instead of being like, you know, bitches and hoes, it's like, it almost reminds me kind of Us Three, like where it's more groove, funk, jazz.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I mean, it's not the best rap in the world, but it's not bad. I think that's about it until we get to the DVDs for this week.
Didn't you watch Trick or Treat?
That's coming up in this week's DVDs.
Oh, okay.
That's called foreshadowing.
Dun, dun.
So yes, what hit theaters this past weekend?
This week, Drew Barrymore's directorial debut, Whip It. Woody Harrelson in Zombieland, the number one movie in America. Who would have thought?
There is justice in the world.
It's supposed to be really good, though. Toy Story 1 and 2 in 3D. Is that going to be any good? Anybody?
No, it's both movies. Apparently, 3D is pretty good. I didn't go to the screening because I really didn't want to drive up to Denver to spend 3 hours watching the movie. I mean, I love the movies, don't get me wrong, but that's a lot of time.
Okay. Yeah. Ricky Gervais in The Invention of Lying, which I've heard good things about as well.
Mm-hmm.
Capitalism, A Love Story, getting a wider release. Michael Moore. Limited release, you've got the Coen Brothers, A Serious Man. Let's see, After School, which looks terrific. Have you seen the trailer for this?
No, I haven't.
Really creepy, low-budget film. It's been playing at some of the film festivals. It's about a high school kid who accidentally films the murder of one of his classmates. Looks really, really unsettling.
Okay.
And finally, limited release, More Than a Game, featuring LeBron James. Does this sound familiar to you, Dave? It follows five young players over the course of their lives playing
Sounds
basketball.
Like Dreams too.
Yeah, this sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it?
Okay.
So, there you go.
Cool. And you saw Whip It.
I liked Whip It a lot. Yeah, fun movie.
Okay. There was a preview screening in town, but they're like, you get to buy tickets for like $10. Like, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm good.
No, it's good. It's good. All the performances are really, really good. Ellen Page is not playing Juno over again. She's actually playing a real character. Owen Wilson's brother, I can't remember his name, the older of the Wilson brothers is in it, and he's just Luke? Freaking hysterical. No.
Brian Wilson?
No. Oh, moving on. Kristen Wiig is in it. She's hysterical. Marsha Gay Harden and Daniel Stern are terrific as the parents in it. Some really stylish scenes. All the rollerball scenes are terrific. Oh, the roller derby, roller derby scenes are really exciting, really well done. It actually works as a comedy. It works as a chick-bashing action movie. It's really good. It's a lot of fun. Okay. It really works for what it is. I was very pleased with Whip It.
Very cool. All right, and then let's talk about what hit DVD today.
DVD, let's see. This week on DVD.
Hitting DVD this week, this not week, today.
Okay, this week on DVD, let's see. Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, the 2-disc special edition.
Big fat, who cares? Wait, sorry, my bad.
Classic film. Didn't you want to do your impersonation of it, Dave?
Okay, there you go.
Yes, I'm waiting for that. Trick or Treat, finally getting a DVD release. This thing was made, what, back in 2007?
Six, I think.
2006, God. Yeah, with Dylan Baker. My Life in Ruins, the final nail in the coffin of Neo Vardalos' film career. It also stars Richard Dreyfuss. Anvil, the story of Anvil. This looks hysterical. This is a documentary about the heavy metal group Anvil. It looks really good.
Wait, correction, the Canadian heavy metal group?
So that's a real group? I saw the thing at Hollywood, and I'm like, looks like a Spinal Tap ripoff. I'm good.
Nope, it's the real deal. It's like Spinal Tap's a true story. Of the Canadian group Anvil. I stand corrected. Stargate Atlantis, the complete series. Mr. Ed, Season 1. Have there been people really waiting for this DVD? Mr. Ed, Season 1.
It's kind of... no, not really.
Hello, I'm Mr. Ed.
I remember watching it when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too. Just talking horses, funny as a kid. Did you ever see that movie with Bobcat Goldthwait, Hot the Trot?
No.
And John Candy was the voice of the horse, and it was opposite him and Bobcat Goldthwait.
No, yeah. I missed that one.
Anyway, moving on. Tokyo, the anthology film featuring episode 2, directed by Michel Gondry.
Yes. Well, no, Interior Design is what it's called.
Oh, okay. Oh, I mean, just the second. Wasn't it the second?
It's the first one.
Oh, it was the first one. Okay, yeah. So I only need to watch the first one and then just turn it off.
Yeah. Go ahead and finish up your list, and then we'll talk about Tokyo. Okay.
Stephen Dorff in The Gate, the 1987 cult horror film that opened up against Ishtar and beat it at the box office. Good job, Stephen. Year 1, the Harold Ramis flop with Michael Cera and Jack Black, rated and unrated version, available on DVD. Alan McBeal, Season 1. I can't believe this is just coming to DVD now.
It's music rights. It's the same thing as like with Parker Lewis in Space. They had to clear all that music.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't heard if this uses the original music or if they use, you know, replacement generic tracks to piss everybody off. But we'll see.
That'd be interesting because, you know, like some of the most famous episodes have Robert Downey Jr. on it.
What was that, Ethan?
Yeah. Finally, I can have a physical copy. I don't have to just watch the torrents over and over again. Jeez.
Not Quite Hollywood, the wonderful documentary about Australian exploitation films. I love this movie. Saw it last year at the Denver Film Fest. Did you see it?
I didn't get a chance to watch it.
Okay. No. A lot of fun. Assassination of a High School President, one of the victims of Yari Film Group essentially going under. This is with Misha Barton and Bruce Willis. It looks hilarious, but it was not released wide, and it's finally getting released on DVD. The It's Alive remake with Bijou Phillips never went into theaters. It looks terrible. Speaking of terrible, the remake of Children of the Corn, which played on the Sci-Fi Channel.
The Syphilis Channel?
Why do they do that? Why? With the S-Y-F-Y. It's just...
I don't know.
We don't have enough time to just say sci-fi. It's got to be sci-fi. 6 Feet Under, the complete series. Good show.
Woo!
A relic from my youth, the animated series, the spinoff from the HBO series, Tales from the Crypt Keeper, the animated Crypt Keeper show.
Oh, I remember watching that as a kid.
Yep, Season 1 and 2, with some very, very tame vignettes in between. But yeah, a lot of fun. Red Dwarf, Back to Earth.
Which is a reunion show for all you Red Dwarf fans.
Yeah, good stuff. Man vs. Food, Season 1.
Woo-hoo.
And then my crap title pick of the week. This was an animated cartoon show based after a toy. My Pet Monster, the complete series.
Oh, yuck.
Yeah, total money grab.
Okay, so we'll go with the crap first. Tokyo was not a fan. Interior designed by Michel Gondry is... It's classic Michel Gondry, where it's kind of, you know, a love story thing that just suddenly starts taking weird turns, and because it's Gondry, you accept it. So it's kind of fun. Beyond that, the other one's blue. I just could not have cared less about the other two movies. Mm. And I was hoping, you know, after The Parish of Tem, you know, you're hoping it'll be on the same level, and not even close. Yeah, it has making of behind-the-scenes stuff. I didn't care enough to actually go through those because it was just such a disappointment of a movie.
That's too bad. I was looking forward to that.
Trick or Treat, on the other hand. Okay, this is the one everyone wants to hear about. It's screened how many times at Comic-Con? Like 3 or 4 times, and everyone's loved it every time. And it's not the end-all be-all of slasher movies like everyone's making it out to be, but it's still very good, and it's still pretty much a crime that it never got a full theatrical release.
So it's not a 10 out of 10, as some sites have reported.
Are you kidding me?
No. In fact, I know a site owner who gave it a 10 out of 10.
You're kidding me.
I'm completely serious. 10 out of 10.
I'm talking like 7.5 or so, maybe. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about a Colorado Springs-based site that gave it a 10 out of 10. No, you
formerly Colorado Springs.
Formerly, yes. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, no, right. I'm saying I'd give it about a 7.5.
Okay, well, I know somebody who gave it a 10 out of 10.
It's a slasher movie. It's kind of an anthology movie in the same... I understand we were talking beforehand that the studio recut the movie. This is an anthology movie telling separate stories in the way that Pulp Fiction did.
Okay.
So not to compare it to Pulp Fiction, but it's good. It's fun. There's some stuff that kind of surprised me and I enjoyed. The only special features on this are like the animated shorts that the director made like 3 years, no, back in 96, as well as a commentary on that. That's it.
How are the performances in it?
You know, they're pretty solid all the way around. There's a lot of surprising stuff all over the place that I really don't want to give away. Anna Paquin was good.
Does Dylan Baker reprise his role from Happiness in it?
You know, I haven't seen Happiness.
Marty would be appalled. I would just go, don't bother.
Okay.
I hate that movie, but
I think
Baker's great in that movie.
Best picture of 1998.
Dylan Baker is very interesting in that movie. He ends up playing two separate roles. I mean, it's the same character doing two separate things that surprised me.
Cool.
And Brian Cox was a very fun surprise. And the whole story revolves around Sam, who's this little boy with a big rag, rucksack or whatever, whatever over his head. And he ends up being the spirit of Halloween. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
So yeah, it's fun. It's well worth checking out. If you're trying to rent it, try renting it a few days before Halloween. Cause come Halloween, this thing's going to be impossible to find. Okay. There's no way unless you're buying it.
I have a copy, so to speak. But I'm waiting for it to become a little deeper into October before I, watch it. So,
okay.
There you go.
For me, as soon as October 1st comes around, it's just nothing but monster movies. Before I forget, I'm so sorry. I forgot to say this before. On Blu-ray this week, Robert Zemeckis' Contact. I bet that looked pretty good on Blu-ray. The 1947 and 1994 Miracle on 34th Street, both on Blu-ray. Available on regular and Blu-ray, Takashi Miike's Audition.
Woohoo!
Why you would want all the clarity to see that? That movie needs to be seen like grungy and like you don't want to see that.
That would be so good. I put that as one of my picks for Hollywood Video. We have to, like, as an employee, you have to pick certain picks.
Look at him, he's too scared to talk to you. Like, don't talk to Dave.
Oh yeah, I was proud to put that one on there.
Also, go down Blu-ray, Charlie Brown Christmas, good stuff, although you can see it on TV every year for free. Ghost Ship, not one of the better Dark Castle movies. The Grinch with Boris Karloff. Yes, the animated How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Good stuff. The Mike Nichols horror film Wolf. I'm a big fan of this with Jack Nicholson and Michelle Pfeiffer. Robert De Niro is Frankenstein's monster, and Kenneth Branagh is Frankenstein, and Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. The Hitcher remake with Sean Bean, which was terrible, and Jim Carrey in The Number 23.
Yippee. Let's go into news because we are taking up plenty of time already. I'll get my one bit out of the way. If you follow me on Twitter and Facebook, you know that, sometimes you decide you're going to do something and there's this part in the back of your mind that says, that's probably not the smartest thing to do. I ignored that part and watched the trailer for the Chipmunks, Alvin and the Chipmunks, the squeakquel. After I finished it, that same corner yelled, "I told you so." Oh my gosh, this looks bad. It was kind of just mediocre bad. And then the Chipettes show up at the end, and I wanted to hurt myself.
Have you seen the original?
No.
Okay.
I'm good.
Because, it looks good. Because I saw the first Garfield live-action movie, which was not terrible, but nothing to get excited about. And then the sequel, which was considerably worse. And it really looks like they're following the same tact. They've managed to make a sequel that looks just unwatchably bad.
I'm willing to bet it'll make more money than Avatar.
You may be right about that. Well, opening Christmas Day, who knows?
Chipmunks going to high school,
it's a safe bet to take your kids to this. On Christmas Day, it's like, what's a movie you can take the whole family to?
Okay, unlike the first one, there's no feces eating in the first trailer. I will give you that much.
Maybe it's like 21 Jump Street. That's why they're going to high school. They're like undercover cops.
That's too clever, Ethan. That's too smart. That's something we would come up with. That's not something the screenwriters came up with.
I mean, even if they tried to make Alvin like, you know, like Parker Lewis or something, you know, I could kind of roll with that, but...
I could see Theodore falling in love with the guinea pig in the science lab, and they like spark a romance. That's the kind of level of intelligence.
And they can't talk to each other through their glass, and then when they talk to each other, it's Al Pacino doing the voice of the hamster.
There you go.
No, well, I thought that Wanda Sykes would be the voice of the guinea pig.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're thinking too lofty, Al Pacino. Yeah, Wanda Sykes, George Lopez...
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll let you guys go on.
Total garbage. Well, Ethan, let's talk about the Nightmare on Elm Street trailer. Did you see this, Dave?
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, what am I talking about? Yeah, I did.
Yeah, Jackie O'Haley. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Were you impressed?
Kind of. I mean, it wasn't... maybe it's just my expectations were set so low. I think this is just going to be awful. It's going to suck. And I was like, well, this just doesn't look too awful.
Mm. I was unhappy, and please... chime in here, Ethan. I was unhappy because, for one thing, I hate trying to make Freddy Krueger sympathetic. I think that's a huge mistake. And for me, the trailer just showed like images of the other movies. It just didn't look like anything new at all to me.
Well,
what do you think of the Nightmare on Elm Street trailer?
I'm a fan of the series, and I actually read the screenplay for this. Uh-huh. And Barry, I know you were kind of upset when we were talking about it earlier because you want Freddy to be a kitty toucher because that way you'd relate to him more. But,
oh, wow. That was uncalled for. Anyway, continue.
Dang.
I was expecting a big laugh there, but it was just kind of awkward. I'm just going to quit talking for the rest of this show.
No, finish your thought, man. Finish your thought.
You know what? It's going to be just spoiler alert, Freddy kills people. Like, really. That's all there is to say. You know, it's going to look like a music video, and that's fine. You know, something. I think this should be kind of glossy, and I'm sure Jackie Earle Haley will be good. But, though, didn't you think in the trailer he kind of sounded like Sling Blade at the end?
Yes, and I wasn't crazy about his makeup design either.
Yeah, like those two things, I'll just wait till I see the finished movie, but yeah, whatever.
I just wish they didn't do it, honestly. You know, Friday the 13th, the original is not good. It's a stupid movie. It has a classic horror status, but it's not a classic. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street just, you know, for me, that's untouchable. I, you know, what can I say? I really wish they were not doing this movie. I wish they were doing a new Nightmare movie and not recycling the original. So.
All right. Next.
Let's see. Other trailers. The Michael Jackson This Is It, which I wonder how that's going to do.
I couldn't care less.
Really?
No. Not even a little bit.
To keep the pedophilia theme of the episode going on. Did you find with people... Okay, you know what? I'm not going to get into this.
Good use of the online editor there, Ethan. Good man. What did you think of the trailer?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I just wonder... you know, I may very well echo whatever it was that Ethan decided not to say. I wonder if we're going to look at this and we're going to look at Michael Jackson, the brilliant performer, but, you know, Michael Jackson, the person, and we're going to get weirded out again.
The Flash game Escape from Neverland Ranch?
That's terrible. No, just you know, the whole, you know, the very, very high pixie voice and, you know, talking about, you know, change the world and save the children. And I wonder if that's going to leave a bad taste in our mouths. I mean, because that's kind of like, I mean, as a longtime Michael Jackson fan, that was always the thing that bugged me. Like, I'd watch his music, I'd watch his videos, or I'd listen to his music, and then I'd hear him interview, and I'm like, ugh. So I wonder if, you know, because we're at this point now where we're very reverential. You know, Michael Jackson's gone, so we're very much like, you know, talking about him the way we talked about Kurt Cobain right after Kurt Cobain died. And I wonder if watching this movie, it's going to go kind of leveling out our intense love for Jackson again. So, I wonder about that. We'll see.
Okay. That's all you.
That's all I had to offer there. Yeah. What else did you do? Oh, Quentin Tarantino at a recent film screening for The Inglourious Basterds didn't hint. He says that over the next few years, he plans on doing Kill Bill Volume 3, continuing the adventures of Beatrix Kiddo and her daughter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. After I see the whole bloody affair, then I might believe it.
Actually, did you guys see him when he was on Charlie Rose like a month ago?
No.
Because he was talking – Charlie Rose, he brought up the topic of biopics for some reason. He was talking about if you ever did a biopic, who would it be of? And I forget who Tarantino mentioned, but it was like some guy who freed slaves or something. And I'm willing to bet that'll be his next movie.
Huh.
I have a feeling, just this weird feeling it'll be his next movie. It'll come out in like 12 years, but still, that'll be his next movie.
Are we ever going to get that Grindhouse one box set with everything?
I don't think so. That date where people were rumoring it coming out has come and gone by a month or so.
That sucks.
Yeah. I'd like to see the theatrical cut again, you know, not through Netflix, but well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, that does suck. The A-Team, the pictures of the A-Team came out.
Yes.
What'd you think?
I'm not horrified. Shockingly, that's not horrified. Because, go ahead, Ethan.
No, you probably have more to say.
I really don't have much more to say, honestly.
My only real knowledge of the A-Team is once when I watched an episode of it with my grandmother at 1 in the morning at my mom's house in Toronto. But actually, on Friday, I was at HMV just browsing during lunch, and I saw they had the first season for $16.99. I nearly bought it. Did I make a mistake?
It's a fun show.
I would have bought it. Yeah, honestly, I think you'll enjoy it, Ethan. It's fun. Especially the first season is pretty good. I think
once you get Hulk Hogan coming in on episodes and stuff, it gets kind of goofy.
Gets a little tired, yeah, towards the end. But I think the initial
Even
episodes
the first
are good.
Few episodes, first three seasons are okay, but once they start bringing in, you know, being hunted by the military,
right,
you're just
right.
Kind of no.
The movie. He's got a good cast, Liam
I'm,
and
I'm
Bradley.
I'm waiting to see if Liam Neeson is going to be cross-dressing, telling some lady while he's chopping out a cigar, you just hired the A-Team.
Actually, that reminds me, I wonder what the tone of this movie is. Is it going to be like kind of Starsky and Hutch, or is it going to be like Miami Vice and be like dead serious?
It's going to be more Starsky and Hutch, but because the show was more like that. It was a lighthearted action show. I mean, you have people who, there's no way that these people were ever in the military because they couldn't shoot the broadside of a barn. No one ever dies in that show.
Other than Love Actually, has Liam Neeson ever actually done comedy?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Be interesting to see how his timing is. I mean, I disassociate him with these really gravely serious movies, so I wonder how he's going to be at comedy.
I know. You can kind of take Taken as a comedy.
That's true.
He hosted Saturday Night Live once.
Did he? I completely forgot about that.
Yeah.
Was he good?
Yeah.
Granted, it's also SNL, so yeah, take that with what you will.
And my final news story, we'll see. Myrick and Sanchez, the original creators, have determined that there will be a Blair Witch 3, and it will take place directly after the events of the first one. It'll be a direct sequel and not a pseudo-sequel like Blair Witch Book of Shadows.
How do you do that? Without making it suck. I mean, you know, to be fair, well, I guess we can bring this up at the same time. The Wreck 2 trailer, have either of you guys seen that?
Not yet, no.
It essentially takes place simultaneously / at the end of Wreck 1. After the end of Wreck, you have a SWAT team going in with a doctor to try to figure out what's going on with the contamination and what's going on, and you find out more about people not being who they thought you thought they were, and apparently it's just outright amazing. Like, people compare it to, like, aliens in Alien. That's how good people are saying Wreck 2 is.
Gee.
I don't see a possibility for doing something like that with a Blair Witch direct sequel.
Because I always thought they were going to... Go ahead.
Do you think there's even interest for this, to be honest?
That's a good question, because Blair Witch 1 is 10 years ago. Blair Witch 2 is you know...
Everyone forgets that one even got made.
Whether it's deserved or not, it has a reputation for being like one of the worst sequels ever. Yeah, I wonder, because I've heard that they were going to go back and do a prequel about the actual witch herself and like set it in Salem. So they apparently have an idea that they really like for a sequel. I wonder if that idea is worth exploring or not.
I don't know. I mean, I know that the creators had pretty much nothing to do with Blair Witch 2.
Right. So, yeah, we can't blame them for that because they didn't write or direct it. But
I mean, this isn't the kind of story that takes place in any kind of populated area. So I don't know what you do. Oh, let's have another camera crew go out. I mean.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right, Dave. It's like the first one was so singular in its achievement. It's like, how do you repeat that and how do you expand on that? I mean, it ended with them dead. We're looking at the lost footage. I mean, end of story. Even if the witch is still out there, who cares? We're not going to go and
look for
it. Maybe
the witch has the camera now.
That'd be kind of cool. You see her like stirring her big cauldron, like first person camera.
I just don't see this working well. I mean, I can see there being renewed interest because of films like Quarantine, Wreck, Cloverfield, stuff like that. People wanting to see where it first came from. Now, it's debatable if it's between that and The Last Broadcast, but that's a whole other discussion. I think Blair Witch is a far better movie, so I could see it getting renewed interest, but I don't see the need for another movie.
But Ethan brings up an excellent point, too. It's like, is there still an audience for this? Because when Blair Witch 2 came out, there was definitely, I mean, the craze had not died off. But I mean, how in 2009 or 2012, whenever this thing comes out, I mean, yeah. Who knows?
All right, Ethan, what you got left?
The cast for the Let the Right One In remake, Let Me In, has been announced. It's going to be the kid from The Road as the boy, the girl who was Joseph Gordon-Levitt's sister in 500 Days of Summer will be the girl, and Richard Jenkins will be the handler.
Oh, man.
I just don't see this going good places.
You bring up one of the things I hated about 500 Days of Summer. I hated the sister character. I thought that was so cheeseball, but that's another discussion altogether. And the kid from The Road. It's like, we haven't even let The Road open up yet. It's like, this kid is already starring in a horror movie to one of the most important horror films ever made.
I just don't see, I think it helps us not, you know, temper our expectations very much.
Could be worse. Could be Jaden Smith as the kid. And I thought it was going to be Jaden Smith as the kid, Dakota Fanning as the girl, and it was going to be set in the hood. That is honestly, I'm not even making this up.
Does the leprechaun show up?
Seriously, dude, I thought that was the movie I thought we were going to see. I really thought they were going to go that cheeseball awful route. But at least, with Richard Jenkins, at least sounds like they're trying to do something that's worthy.
Well, the thing is, like, I don't think that should be remade, but I don't think just because it's a remake, instantly it will suck. Like, at least it has, like, good source material to go off, you know? Yeah,
just like Old Boy, and we all have high hopes for that one.
Well, there can be good remakes, like, you know, Departed remake of Infernal Affairs.
The Thing, mentioned The Thing, The Fly, well, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, and then you got Cronenberg remaking The Fly.
Yeah.
Remaking his remake of The Fly, yeah.
Yeah, and Boys Don't Cry, which is a remake of Just One of the Guys.
That's actually pretty funny. Do we know if they're going to go as far as the book does? Because we know the movie didn't, the film,
I hope the American film doesn't, because that would have added an extra little creep factor I could have done without.
Yeah, I mean, I know pedophiles are all the rage in the news right now, but I mean, yeah, do we really need the film to go there or even suggest that?
Well, since Dakota Fanning isn't in there in this movie, they probably won't go that route now.
She's like, I won't do any more of those movies. They're career killers.
Well, I mean, if you're going to remake it, do something different, you know?
Right.
Like in The Hood.
Yeah.
Ice-T with the wide collar shirt and the fake afro.
You like my version of The Right One In, don't you?
Yeah.
It's like Candyman's World. You know, if they put it like in Candyman's World, that could be interesting.
Yeah.
Probably still suck, but you know.
I like Candyman.
Yes. Mm. What else you got, Ethan?
The first set pictures from The Beaver have been released. Have you guys seen these?
I haven't seen them, but I've seen the headlines, and I'm horrified and amused at the same time.
Can only imagine. So it looks good?
Mel Gibson will win an Oscar for this, mark my words.
Oh, this is the one where he has his hand up the beaver, the puppet. Yeah, I've seen these pictures, yeah.
Yeah, he's playing with a beaver, yeah.
Well, what I want to know is he has this movie called Edge of Darkness coming out. It's supposed to be like his big Oscar movie. It was supposed to come out this year. It was filmed last year. Like, what has happened to that movie? It was supposed to be his big comeback movie as an actor. So I guess The Beaver is going to be his reemergence. Yeah, I mean, after Apocalypto and all that controversy, The Beaver is going to be his return.
Yeah, he just needs another anti-Semitic remark to come out to get public interest in this. You know.
He's going to do The Passion 2 Electric Boogaloo.
That actually has a nice ring to it.
Kind of does. Yeah. A little disturbing. Or your sister's a werewolf. A little bit more disturbing. Okay, that was bad. What else have you got, Ethan? Help me get out of this.
Last one. Well, the trailer for The Tooth Fairy came out.
So we started with an awful trailer and ended with one that's actually worse.
This looks like a fake trailer.
It's something. Yeah, it's really saying something. When a trailer can be even worse than the Chipettes showing up at the end of that album, the Chipmunks trailer.
I understand that Johnson wants to go the kid route, that he wants to be Tim Allen. He's
turning into Ice Cube, though.
Because he started off like the next Schwarzenegger, and The Rundown was wonderful. We can agree how good The Rundown is.
Even cool.
Even Walking Tall was good. Well, not bad. But this is, what a step down. What a step down. Yeah, Race to Witch Mountain was fun, but this looks, even with Billy Crystal and Julie Andrews and, God forbid, Ashley Judd in the cast, this looks like easily one of the worst movies of the year. It's coming out in January. I mean, the writing is on the wall for this movie.
Well, the thing is, I have to support it because it has hockey in it, and I'm Canadian, so.
Well, you can always hope that Ashley Judd turns into her character from Bug. And then, because she's taking them into the Kool-Aid, but like the Rock's taking, he's actually a psycho, and then they end up burning up their house.
That'd be kind of interesting. Like, the Rock thinks he's the Tooth Fairy, just like the guy in Bug thought he had bugs, and they start to self-mutilate themselves.
Yeah. That would be Harry Connick Jr. can show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Did you guys like the trailer for From Paris to With Love or no? The John Travolta, John Myers?
Yeah, kind of.
All right.
It doesn't help that we saw the wrong trailer first.
Yeah, the other trailer sucks. I like the American trailer better. But
Yeah.
The movie might suck. It comes out in February, so who knows?
Who knows indeed.
Yeah.
All right, is that it for you, Ethan?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we will be right back to talk about Fight Club.
This is Ray.
Sup?
Let's listen in as Ray hits on Sandra.
Excuse me, miss, but do you know karate? Because your body is kicking.
Ooh. Now, let's listen to the same scene. Only this time, Ray is sporting a quality Geek Label t-shirt.
Yo, baby, I was wondering,
Damn.
Rejection.
What's up with that?
We can't really stop it.
Damn.
But we can outfit you in buttery smooth designs for geeks, gamers, and tech heads. They're custom t-shirts. They're not magic t-shirts.
Damn.
Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
This is Jonathan Colton, and you're listening to Screen Geeks. Also, there is some music playing in the background, which is probably a copyright violation.
And we're back. Our thanks to Jonathan Colton for doing a drop for us. I have a song from his live set that I taped that I'll play after the outro music if you want to hear it.
Cool. Awesome.
I might even put up a link. I've got the whole thing on a zip file on Screen Geeks. I might put a link to it if you want to hear the entire concert. It's fun times. What are we talking about this week, sir?
We are finally finishing our director series on David Fincher.
No, we've got one more after this.
We do?
Yeah, we've still got Panic Room to go.
Oh my gosh, I feel like we've been talking about this guy for a year.
Should we take a break since it's Halloween so we can do...
Well, we can. I think we'll have time.
Okay.
Yeah. No, by all means, Panic Room's awesome too. But hey, you know, I should show some more enthusiasm, right? This is Fight Club. We're talking about Fight Club today. This movie is almost exactly 10 years old to the day, which is really, really cool.
Almost
10 years old to the very day we're talking about this film, based on the... I'm not going to say his name right. I always say Chuck Palahniuk. Do you know how to say it right, Ethan?
Palahniuk?
Is it Palahniuk? Chuck Palahniuk? I always say his name wrong. But based on the novel, a very faithful adaptation. In fact, Palahniuk, I'll just go with Ethan's enunciation. Palahniuk has said that he saw the movie based on his book, and he was worried because he thought that the film would completely make his book obsolete because he loved the film so much. This is one of the most radical Hollywood movies to ever be released, let alone by Fox. Not Fox Searchlight, not one of those wussy sub-studio genre releases. This is Fox, the same studio that gave us Star Wars and X-Men, released Fight Club, a movie that on the surface looks like a fascist, anti-capitalism, anti-everything, pessimistic, nihilistic 90s movie. But really, it's a film that's against fascism. It's against homegrown terrorism. But it doesn't really reveal its hand until late in the movie in one of the most radical, radical plot twists. So much to say about this movie. It's a great movie.
I want to start with the marketing because please. There were three movies that Fox was pushing at the same time. I don't remember if you remember seeing these in the theater. It was Fight Club. It was Anna and the King.
Yep.
And I forget what the third one was. So I don't think it did as well. But Anna and the King was good. I mean, this was like a really good time in Fox history. Yes, Anna and the King and the Fight Club in the same sentence. But they're both good films. And I remember everyone after that trailer dropped. It was three movies. Everyone's like, "What was that? That looks so interesting." And no one went to see it.
Yeah, total flop.
I saw it twice.
So did I. It opened up against Double Jeopardy with Ashley Judd and Tommy Lee Jones, and it got its butt kicked by Double Jeopardy, which nobody even remembers or talks about anymore. The reviews were vicious. Roger Ebert was one of the many critics who said the film is irresponsible, that it's a movie about guys, about white guys, white angst guys who have the need to beat each other up, and that's all there is to it. It's just a movie that's pro-nihilism. And even the critics who plotted the production values and the performances and the twist ending, this movie got terrible reviews. Word of mouth was deadly. It was out of theaters. It barely made its budget back. An expensive movie, too. Fox really, not only did they push the soap angle for the advertisements, but most of the trailers made the movie look like an action film, which is so the wrong way to – because it's a comedy. It really is a comedy. It's violent, but it's a comedy. But they made it look like another Brad Pitt action movie, which is one of the many, many miscalculations on how they pushed this movie. I love the Dust Brothers music score to this film.
Yes, I've got that on my iPod.
It's wonderful. It's so weird that it fits so perfectly. It's really just a series of like beeps and blips, but it's wonderful. It's brilliant. I think it's one of the best performances that Edward Norton has ever given. And Pitt is doing, I mean, if you were to be really picky, you could say he's doing kind of a variation on the character that he played so well in 12 Monkeys. But what the
Absolutely.
Heck? What the heck? He's terrific as Tyler Durden. He's wonderful in this movie.
Ethan, you're of a different generation. What did you think of this film?
Well, it's a good thing you mentioned my generation, because probably if you ask the kind of the people my age what their favorite movie is, I'm willing to bet that like 95% of the answers will be Fight Club. This is just a movie that really it came out at the right time for my generation, and I remember seeing it on video. I remember renting it. My dad rented it. I watched it with him. We both enjoyed it. Then. I watched it with my stepmother the exact next day, and her reaction was not very enthusiastic. But
not so positive?
Yeah, but it's a movie I've seen probably about 5 times, I'd say. And it's really just very – I think the things I'm trying to talk here about what makes it attractive to my generation. I think, well, obviously it's a very flashy movie, but like you said, I think a lot of people do misinterpret it. I think people do see it as a movie about about pro-terrorism and stuff. But I think it's really a movie just about doing what makes you happy and how, in some ways, going on the wrong path and finding the quest for happiness leads you to the wrong things and such. So, yeah.
Definitely, because initially it's kind of a parody of consumerism, because the narrator, as he's referred to in the film, the Edward Norton character, I mean, he's got that ridiculous obsession for the items in his catalog. He's extremely materialistic, and he has this hollow shell of an existence that really doesn't come to life until he all of a sudden introduces himself to all this danger, the physical danger of living in that hilariously dilapidated building, the psychological danger of living with someone who is clearly imbalance, to put it mildly, and then getting basically falling for a woman who is also something of a nutcase, and surrounding himself with these people who are willing to self-mutilate themselves just so they can feel alive. I mean, this movie could be about clothing. It could be about obsession with music. It could be such a typical film about materialism, but instead it's taken that to the extreme level of what's a way to feel alive? How about by destroying yourself physically and psychologically night after night, and then living to tell about it and feeling good about that?
It's just an amazing film. I know there are some people, I'll just say it, Billy Flynn was not a fan of the film because he picked out what the twist was about 10 minutes in.
Mm. Actually, I want to mention the twist. How are we allowed to say what it is, or would that be too?
Do you want to wait a little bit before we get into it? Or do you guys think we're kind of at a spoiler section? We probably should. Because I think you do kind of have to mention spoilers to really talk about this movie.
Could we
properly.
Not give it up? Could we not? Is there a way to
do
that?
Well, I think I can say what I want to say. I can delicately dance around it. But
when he gets kidnapped by aliens,
when it turns out he's a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. The Robin Williams cameo at the end just kills it for me. But every time I watch the movie, I just enjoy watching the chemistry between Pitt and Norton, and part of me is always just kind of disappointed when I find out the twist, just because I enjoyed that part so much. I'm not saying it's a bad twist. It's important to the movie and it's very interesting. But I love watching them together so much that it just kind of, I don't know, you know.
Sure, yeah. Sure. But don't you also love the scenes with Norton and Bonham Carter? I love them because there's such a, you know, initially you think she's the one who has a problem. And then once you know what's going on, there's such an extra dimension. And you really understand, like, man, she's one of the more clear-headed people in this movie.
Which is really messed up.
Yeah, it really is. Like, all the scenes, like, in the kitchen between the two of them are so wonderful. Because once you know what's going on, it makes it funny but also so tragic to realize, like, man, she's putting up with the worst crap ever.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember noticing the splice cuts. That's all I'm going to refer to this twist about. The first time I watched it, And then from then on out, seeing it after that, I was just like, oh, after the second time, I'm like, this is just so cool. I really enjoyed it.
And I know there are people who like to say, oh, the twist, it makes no sense. There are clear contradictions. Actually, there really aren't. I've seen the movie so many times. There's not a single example in the movie where it contradicts it. You know, if you feel there is, email me and I'll I'll verbally abuse you. But, you know.
Well, you bring up a good point, because I think in Lesser Hands, you would have a lot of contradictions. I think with how precise and how exacting David Fincher is as a filmmaker, I mean, they were taught. I've listened to part of the watched part of the documentary on Benjamin Button, and there were spots. I mean, those sets that they had were accurate down to the detail. Like, he would go grab a newspaper off the newsstand, and if it wasn't from the time period, he'd be like, "Why isn't this done right?" Can be a nightmare to work with as a filmmaker, but it makes for a very more authentic film experience, I think. And when you have that level of exacting details, he's going to make sure that there are no contradictions in the film.
Absolutely. And I totally agree with you, Ethan. I mean, having looked at the film a few times, in fact, even this year, to delicately tread on the movie's big secret, all of the scenes between Pitt and Norton, notice who the extras are looking at and who they are listening to when the two of them are in the room. I mean, haven't gone back. You just kind of notice, like, this movie, they thought of everything. It's seemingly so. I mean, Ethan made a comment I didn't completely agree with, but I got to say he's got an interesting point. A couple weeks back, when he compared Fincher to Kubrick, Fincher is another one of these directors, as you mentioned, Dave, who has such a great, great eye for detail. And clearly something like Fight Club, which he spent such a long time working on and perfecting. Now, this is not a stupid movie, and which I think is especially insulting to a lot of the critics who called it such. If anything, I mean, even the scene where Tyler Durden and the narrator, they pull that guy over and they put a gun to his head and they humiliate him and then they make him run off. And, you know, and that whole thing about, the, you know, every day after this is going to be the greatest day of his life. That scene is so much the whole point of this movie, because these guys are living in hell, literally living in an absolute hell of a life. And but it's about trying to feel alive and to feel vital and to feel masculine and, you know, and to feel strong. It's not a movie about how cool it is to blow stuff up. These people are empty. They're stupid. What they're doing is wrong. The whole group and the whole Jared Leto the fascists and that whole group. I mean, they're idiots and they're clearly misguided.
Should we bring up Meatloaf?
Oh yeah, he's wonderful in this film.
And we'll bring up the spoof too, because you can't go without talking about the spoof about Film Club.
Yeah, spoof is great.
But yeah, Meatloaf was really good in this. It's not wonderful. Like Rocky Horror Picture Show Meatloaf. This was like Bob.
And with this and Rocky Horror, I think it's worth saying that. I mean, what a ballsy guy. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, he's known for these rock ballads, and, you know, he doesn't do these roles that, like, look how awesome I am. I mean the part in Fight Club. I mean,
he's known for having.
Right.
So, yeah.
Exactly. And he's taking this role that's like actor suicide. Who would take that role? Meatloaf took it, and he's wonderful in the film. Wonderful.
Most definitely. That was me hitting my glass for some reason. I don't know why.
I didn't like the ending. I'm not going to lie. I've never liked the ending. I think once you find out what the twist is, I honestly thought the movie should end there. I didn't like the whole
resolution.
Showdown. I like... I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the directions the story goes, but to me, the movie writes itself into a corner. The whole showdown at the building with the character having a battle within himself, and then the whole thing with the buildings exploding at the end. I just,
you don't like "You Met Me at a Strange Time in My Life" and then the Pixies song, you know, starting. And
I love this song, and I don't think the movie ever cops out. I really don't. You know, I don't think it ever chickens out or comes up with an ending that's compromised. Just for me, it just doesn't feel like much of an ending.
Okay, because I felt like the ending when he takes when one of the characters takes that last drastic action, we'll just say,
yeah,
it kind of like it felt like it was the beginning of his life in many ways, kind of like at the end of Trainspotting, where after they get cleaned up and everything, he kind of has a whole new life. And now, granted, Trainspotting is a bit more pessimistic of a film, but I think you can make the correlation there.
For me, the movie ended in the hotel room once the narrator and Tyler Durden meet each other and we find out exactly what's been going on with all those business trips. For me, that's the movie coming to full circle.
Actually, has anyone here read the book?
No.
I have not.
No, I've read some other of his books, and I got to say I was quite grossed out, but no, I've not read Fight Club.
Have you?
Okay. No, because I'd be interested how similar the ending is and such. Yeah.
Hmm. I think Marty has. I'll have to ask him.
But. We should bring him on the show soon. I like that guy.
Next time he comes out here, we'll hog time and drag him on the show.
No, he'd be great. Yeah.
And this time we won't talk about the hottest women in cinema. Oh, that was the most.
You know, something that really overshadowed this movie, come to think of it, was, it came out the same year as The Sixth Sense, which also had a mind-blowing twist of an ending. But let me throw this at you, because I actually asked my students this the other day, because we watched The Crying Game. And,
how did that go?
Oh, it was a disaster. They didn't like it.
Oh, boy.
I had two students.
It's a good movie. Were they just grossed out? Because that's a good movie, if you look past the
They didn't.
Twist.
They were not engaged by it. I had two students who really loved it, and the rest of the class, they either didn't know what they thought or they really just did not like the film.
Because if they just don't like it because there's a penis in it, that's kind of like, really?
They didn't like the ambiguity of the characters and what the characters were going through, and it just a lot of them, just from what I could tell from what they said, they just didn't seem very engaged by the movie. Anyway.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's okay. No, it's worth discussing. What I mentioned was that for years I've been saying The Sixth Sense, even without the twist ending, even if it ends, with Cole, the doctor, and the little boy at the play at the high school, and it's like, the boy's like, I'm better now, and the movie ends there. I've always argued for years that the movie would still be good, even if Bruce Willis does not go home and the thing with the red doorknob and we don't know what the twist is. I've always said that The Sixth Sense is still good, even if you didn't have the twist. My question to the class was, is The Crying Game still good? And I've always felt that Fight Club needs the twist. It absolutely needs the twist. It's absolutely essential to establish what the twist is. Because to me, that's the whole point. And what do you guys think?
I think they're different movies.
Oh, yeah, no question.
I mean, it's kind of hard to compare them. I don't hold The Sixth Sense in quite as high a regard, but I can understand what you're saying. You could still make a movie out of it, even if they took that twist out at the end. I think I agree with you. You could probably, because the entire point of the movie is the twist.
Yes, yeah.
There's a point where, I think at the same time, there's a very distinct difference between having the point be the twist and still making a great story, and using the twist as a gimmick to get you out of a writing corner.
Yeah, because I definitely, I've never felt this was a gimmick. There's certain movies that it's such a gimmick, but I've never felt that this was gimmicky. I just thought it was incredibly clever. I didn't dislike The Village as much as the rest of America. I'm trying to think of a good example.
Orphan.
Sure. Yeah.
would it have been a better movie without the twist?
I think it would have been a better movie had it not been made at all. But no, but there's a movie that doesn't need its twist. That's a good example. It's a gimmick. It's unnecessary. It's there just for people to go, I didn't see that coming. Well, of course you didn't, because the movie didn't build up to it. Whereas Fight Club, they are foreshadowing it through the entire movie, not only with the cuts, but because of the performances and the way the movie was shot. It's, it's so ingeniously set up.
What do you think, Ethan?
Pretty much just agree with Barry. The twist is essential to the movie, really.
And this is a case where it's not a bad thing.
Yeah,
so
not
often
at all.
You have the twist and you're like, oh, really?
Well, let's pick on Shyamalan for a second since you brought it up. I love Unbreakable, but I've never felt that
they could have done the ending differently.
Not necessary. And it's the opening and closing title scroll that they have for that movie I thought was completely unnecessary. The twist ending of that, which I felt was kind of injected just because it was demanded, but that movie is so terrific without it, I thought.
I think the movie's smart enough that you didn't need the whole comic book setup scroll at the beginning.
Right.
And you could have had him just saying, now you know who I am, I know who I am, where are you going, and fade out, and you know where he's going, you know what he's going to do.
Exactly.
You don't need the whole, homicide life on the street title crawl at the end.
I actually think the twist of Unbreakable makes the movie more powerful, to be honest.
Well, the twist is good, but you're talking about the title card specifically, right?
Yeah.
Like how it just kind of like turns, actually, homicide, dragnet. It's more of a dragnet ending.
Sure.
That it just didn't need.
And I was disappointed that the opening scroll mentioned the comic book thing, because for months before this movie came out, the trailers were so mesmerizing, and you're going, well, what is the twist? Is he an angel? What is the secret of this movie? What is it that the trailer's not telling us? And then to openly say it's comic books in the opening scroll.
Well, and it drives the point home enough about comic books in the beginning. Sorry, Ethan.
Could you just blame that on the marketing then and not the actual movie?
Maybe.
I would think that Shyamalan would have had enough pull after The Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
To... Actually, I think I read something where it said they he famously disagreed with Disney on the marketing of the movie. Hmm. Or he wanted it marketed like a superhero movie, and they said, oh, no, market it like a supernatural thriller. And
sure.
I don't know.
And well, and you could have done it any way you wanted without putting those title cards in. I think the movie would have been a better movie without them.
I agree.
And I love Unbreakable. It's my favorite Shyamalan film easily. It's right. I mean, you know, The Happening's right behind it. But
I love his first two movies so much. I really do. And
the one with the one with Rosie O'Donnell.
No. Though I have seen Wide Awake. Yeah, very good, Ethan. I completely forgot about that. You know, it's like people who like mention like the Sugarland Express. I don't think of that as like one of my favorite Spielberg movies.
Or Within the Woods when they talk about Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
Which I think I actually have somewhere.
I like The Woods.
No, Within the Woods. Like the original.
Oh
like,
my gosh, yeah. The precursor to Evil Dead. Yeah. Yes. Do you have that?
I think I do
somewhere. Wow, I'd love to see that. I've never seen that.
I'll see if I can track it down.
Anyway, we were talking about Fight Club, weren't we?
Yeah, we were.
Yeah.
Us going on a tangent? Never.
No, that was good stuff. We kind of went over like 12 different directions. Yeah. Yes. What else do we need to say about Fight Club?
I want
to
talk about Film Club real quick. Have either of you seen this?
Yes.
Did you see it, Ethan?
I can't remember.
It is such a spot-on spoof of Fight Club in so many ways, down to the point where instead of him ordering out of the IKEA catalog or whatever it was like from like Sight and Sound ordering all this different film equipment. And it's such a loving tribute to Fight Club in many ways, but the part where they're like, his name was Silent Bob, that just that just kills me every time.
What I was thinking of, because I've seen that
I'd
too,
shoot William Shatner.
The thing that I remember when I was in college, it was an online spoof that was really popular called Wimp Club. Have you seen that?
No.
Where the thing is like, I want you to hug me as hard as you can. Yeah, Wimp Club. Yeah.
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, that was wow, amazing. Anyway.
There's really no point to talk about that.
That sounds terrible, I have to be honest.
Yeah. Film Club is actually kind of interesting and humorous. How like they're talking about like the film rules that you can only do and you had to make your short film. And yeah, it's like totally for the hardcore film geeks.
Nice. Well,
I don't know if it's on YouTube or what, but I have it on DVD somewhere.
Yeah, I think I've seen that.
But yeah, okay. Oh. I guess Fight Club is a good movie. There's no way around it. Just like a lot of other Fincher's other movies, you know. He's a good filmmaker.
Yeah, it's certainly one of his edgiest films, but the fact that it got made is something of a miracle. There was one critic who did love the film, compared it to A Clockwork Orange, and I agree with that sense.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That it is amazing that this film was released by a major studio. And you
was
know,
was that critic you?
No. I wish I could take credit for that, but no. No, I gave it a 3 out of 4 star review when it came out, and kind of what I'm saying now, I had some problems with the last 20 minutes of it, but everybody I saw it with appreciated it as a great movie, but it was gone. It was gone in just like a few weeks, but Double Jeopardy played throughout the year. So,
but then you had home video, and now
yeah.
These things will tend to straighten themselves out.
If anybody listening gets the chance to see this movie at a midnight screening, if there's any screenings in your town, I couldn't recommend it further. It is such a movie to see on the big screen. It really is. It
absolutely is. Cool. Well, next week we're going to wrap up our David Fincher series with Panic Room.
Panic Room.
I love how every one of these movies has been good. Makes me happy. Let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this week. Because we're over an hour, so let's crank through this.
Okay, this week in theaters, Couples Retreat. This is Peter Billingsley, Ralphie from A Christmas Carol, Christmas Story, excuse me, directing, and it stars Vince Vaughn, Malin Ackerman, Jason Bateman, and...
Favreau's in it too, isn't he?
Favreau's in it, and what's her name? I can only think of her detective character. Help me, Kristen Bell. Bell. Veronica Mars. Yes, Kristen Bell. Sorry. All right, that is the only wide release. In limited release, you've got the Chris Rock documentary, Good Hair, which looks terrific. And Education, which is getting great reviews. It stars Carey Mulligan, Alfred Molina, and Olivia Williams from The Sixth Sense. I like Olivia Williams. Freestyle, starring Corbin Bleu of High School Musical. Why do I mention this movie? It's directed by William Dear. He did Harry and the Hendersons and If Looks Could Kill. I have a soft spot for William Dear.
Like the Richard Grieco If Looks Could Kill?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, the Richard Grieco If Looks Could Kill. Yeah. Freestyle. It doesn't look good, but I might see it just to support William Dear because I love him so much.
How often do we get a crap title of the week for theatrical that no one's heard of?
Yeah, really.
Then DVDs for next week.
DVDs.
Not
quite
as long a list as it was for this week.
It gets pretty interesting. You've got the huge blockbuster hits, The Proposal with Ryan Reynolds, Sandra Bullock, and unfortunately Betty White. She's not the highlight of that movie. Drag Me to Hell, a movie that Dave and I weren't that crazy about, the Sam Raimi film.
I'm gonna give it another chance though.
But you know what? I'll bet it's huge on DVD. I'll bet it picks up a serious following.
That and Trick or Treat, impossible to get at Halloween.
I can see those playing at most Halloween parties this year. Land of the Lost, the film I really thought was funny with Will Ferrell. Well, maybe I was the only one.
I'll check it out.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah. I thought it was really funny. Every Little Step, the documentary about A Chorus Line, supposed to be really good. Here we go. The original Stepfather. Yes! Finally on DVD. Joseph Rubin directs.
I hope we get that so I can get that.
Oh, it's so good. And Terry O'Quinn starring as the Stepfather. This is a terrific thriller. See this. An 80s slasher film that doesn't have quite the reputation, but it's finally getting the special edition Anchor Bay release everybody wanted. Happy Birthday to Me.
Which is pretty much notorious for like one kill, right?
Well, I don't know.
No?
Well, I don't want to give it away. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But something like that, yeah, it's good. It's kind of like, it's not as smart as April Fool's Day, but it's a similar idea where it's kind of a gimmicky slash okay. movie. Yeah, I recommend it. Curious George, A Very Monkey Christmas. And I'm not even at the crap title yet, but I'm getting
it. I was going to say, is that, okay.
Jackass, The Lost Tapes. It's just like one of those things you buy when you're at like the video store late at night and you're drunk and you next morning you're like, oh, I bought Jackass, The Lost Tapes.
Yeah, you fell off a ladder.
Lovecraft, Fear of the Unknown. This is a documentary about H.P. Lovecraft. The documentary features John Carpenter, Neil Gaiman, Guillermo del Toro, and Stuart Gordon all talking about H.P. Lovecraft. That's going to be cool.
Okay.
Crap titles of the week. Well, you know what? Let me throw out the Blu-ray titles real quick before I forget. Stop Making Sense, the Jonathan Demme documentary, well, the concert film on the Talking Heads. Awesome movie. One of the best concert films ever. Love the Talking Heads. Ron Howard's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which I'll bet looks good on Blu-ray, but it's still not going to make it a good movie. Terrible.
I saw that twice in the theater.
Wow. Did you like it?
At the time.
Yeah.
Kind of like how I liked If Looks Could Kill when I was like in junior high.
Okay. There you go. South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut on Blu-ray.
Because you need the Terrence and Phillips song in HD.
I guess so.
Your HD surround audio.
It's a good movie. Who am I kidding? It's a great movie. Oliver Stone's Natural Born Killers. That might be a bit much on Blu-ray, but there you go. Screwballs, an 80s sex comedy. Definitely did not need a Blu-ray release. The Craft, not my favorite horror movie, with Robin Tunney. Did you guys like The Craft?
I watched it like 2 in the morning on TBS once.
That's really the best way to see it, come to think of it. Let's see. Also on Blu-ray, finally, Kong, Return to the Jungle. This is an animated sequel to Peter Jackson's King Kong. Apparently he goes back to Skull Island. Why would
he
go back to Skull Island?
Yes. Didn't he die?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, well, apparently he survived the fall, and he swims back to Skull Island.
So it's Kong. It's Crank 3. It's Crank 3 is what you're saying it is.
Whatever the heck it is, it's an animated movie, and it looks terrible. All right, fine.
I guess there's no work in New York, so, you know, there's no employment there. So you gotta go back to
this. And this still isn't the crap titles of the week. I just like to point this out.
We got three, because these three were just too good or too bad, depending on how you look at it. A TV movie Robert Pattinson did back in the day, The Haunted Airman. Haunted Airman.
I saw this cover and almost put it on the list. I'm like, I can't even do that.
He's institutionalized because he's a haunted airman, but is he haunted, or does it have something to do with his doctor, played by Julian Sands? I wonder.
Why do I get the feeling we're going to get this at the store, and I'm going to end up watching it just for the laughs?
You know you're going to get it at Hollywood. You know you're going to get it there.
Gosh.
Barney, Terrific Holiday Collection. TEE-rific Holiday Collection. That's how I read it because that's how it's spelled. And finally, crap title of the week number 3. I guess the question is, which one of these is the worst? What do you think? Send us an email. National Lampoon's Endless Bummer, starring Matthew Lillard, Joan Jett, and Vanessa Angel of Kingpin.
That's a pretty appropriate title.
Endless Bummer.
I don't even know where to go with that.
I think the producers are like, you know, let's just call it what it is.
This is going to suck, so
yeah. There you go.
Okay. Let's get to our voicemails and emails.
Yes.
I will start with email. I will start with Valencia because she tends to send us emails occasionally. Says, I can now agree with Josh. Mirrors was worse than The Happening. I spent more time yelling and talking back at the screen than I ever have. And she watched the unrated cut. So, yeah, that's pretty bad.
Wow.
Yeah. Let me track down this other one here real quick. This is from Adam. For all you GRD listeners, he's also Jabba. we love Adam. Dude, I don't even know how to respond to this email, so I'm just going to read it. I listened to you guys for a long time a while back. I had to cut down on my podcast listening for a while. Hearing about the loss of Josh is a disappointment, but it did cause me to go back and listen to some recent episodes. Still a great show. The Real Man's Film Spotting. Wow. Yeah. Can't wait for new episodes, and my condolences go out to you all from Adam. So thank you so much, sir. That's like the nicest thing I think anyone's ever said about our
show.
Thank
you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Dang. And now we have some voicemails. You know, we'll just go back to Valencia for the first one. So, okay. Yeah, let's go ahead and run that now.
Hi, this is Valencia. This past week, I've been sick, and I bring that up because the day the latest episode was released on iTunes, I couldn't download it from my iPhone and play later, so I had to hope that it would play all the way through and not stop for whatever reason. I'm listening, and oh my God, I laughed so much and so hard. I was like, I gotta try again at home. And yeah, I know how I like to listen to you guys at work, but it was a good show. Learned a lot. The tone in Melissa's voice when she talked about stuff she watched but didn't like, talking about Goonies, was so funny to me. And I'm sure she's always sounded like that, but for some reason, I seriously laughed out loud at that. And to quote her, I think she was talking to Ethan, and she was like, yeah, like, you're four. But yeah, I like that. So as I was re-listening, I looked up the Wikipedia on that one movie Barry talked about, the Bobcat one. I read the description, all I can say was, oh my God, over and over again. I need to forget I ever read that. I forgot to mention my own Midnight Meat Train because of Josh. I kind of watched it online when it was available, but when it was released on DVD, I bought it. While listening to Melissa talk about her first date with Josh, it made me think of the Leonard Party 6 episode and the guys were talking about making their girlfriends, I think, watch that movie and them with them. And whether or not they got another date after that, I'm too lazy to look for it, for the exact quotes, but that was another favorite episode of mine. Later, Barry mentioned The Dark Crystal, and I think a DVD release. A friend of mine had me watch that a while back, and up until last year, I had never watched Star Wars, and I bring that up because as I'm watching one of the characters who was trying to be the main character's friend, he sounded too much like Jar Jar Binks. Felt like I was watching Star Wars all over again. Dark Crystal was not as awful as I wanted it to be, though. If it seemed like I was rushing through it, I have a tendency to like lose my train of thought and whatever. But y'all have a good show and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you, Valencia, very much.
Wonderful, thank you. Josh would have been proud to know that you bought Midnight Meat Train. That is awesome.
That's on my list. I'm actually getting a root canal on Wednesday, which is going to suck. Oh. Yeah, I'm getting it done first thing in the morning, so then I can take the rest of the day off because my job, my regular job is talking on the phone all day. Not going to want to do that. So I'm going to rent Midnight Meat Train along with a couple pre-streets.
Wow.
I'm going
to. Sure, you want to get something more pleasant so you don't feel like you're having a root canal all over again?
No. It'll be a good movie. And I mean, I can have like three out at a time, so I'll get some other fun stuff.
Okay, yeah. Get some fun because I love Midnight Meat Train, but it's a little rough.
Watch how the head falls, though. That's all that matters.
Yeah, there's lots of that. You will not be disappointed. It's a good movie, and Bradley Cooper stars in it.
See? Exactly. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Let's go ahead and play one next from the good Mr. Billy Flynn.
Billy.
I get the feeling that Midnight Meat Train might become a bit of a running theme here for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go.
Hello, everyone. It is Billy Flynn calling, and thank you for being back. Trust me, I understand. So let's get to it, shall we? You know, I'm from that generation, and I've never cared for the Goonies. It seems like exactly the kind of movie that they wanted kids to love, And I just never really had that good of a time with it at all. I tried. Back in the day when I was a kid, watched it. Nope, didn't think much of it. True Lies, however, oh my God, dude, Jamie Lee Curtis is smoking hot. No, she was not born with both parts. That's a silly internet rumor. Bad, bad. You know, there was a really awesome commentary track from a defunct podcast that was awesome that was called, Geek Label Radio. They did a wonderful commentary track on that. Jennifer's Body. I was interested in seeing Jennifer's Body simply because it was a Diablo Cody film. I happened to like Juno quite a bit. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Should it have been a Best Picture thing? No, not necessarily, but I had a really good time with it. Megan Fox, incredibly overrated. I don't care how hot people tell me she is. I'm sorry. It's Megan Fox, and I don't like her, so whatever. Whatever. So, hey, I liked Jersey Girl. Back off of Jersey Girl. Juno was fun, too. Ethan, you rock, dude. I love hearing the things you say. It just cracks me up to no end whatsoever. And Barry, dude, seriously? Watch Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. Do it. Do it now, or I will come find you. Okay, no, I won't come find you because this weekend I'm off to an Oktoberfest party, and I'm going to do copious amounts of drinking, and at some point in time I'm going to sit down and have my own little Josh Memorial as I finally sit down and watch Midnight Meat Train, because the man told me I should do it, and by God, I'm going to. Thank you, Screen Geeks, for being back, and keep bringing me more greatness, because that's pretty much what I expect, and you don't want my expectations to be lowered, do you? Do you? Have a great one, guys. And ladies, bye. That ladies was for Barry, by the way.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn.
Thank you, as always.
Yeah, we love mocking it anyway. And I think Flynn is specifically talking about in True Lies when Jamie Lee Curtis goes on the hooker thing, mission.
Yes, yes.
Because, yes, in the frumpy shoulder pads and glasses, yeah, not so much, but...
Yeah, no, that's actually, you could probably call it Operation Hooker, what she actually is asked to do. That's actually a very good point. And I want to mention also what he said. I really appreciate that observation, that it's one of those, that the Goonies, even though I like the film, it really is one of these movies designed for kids to like. There was another movie that came out around our time, Dave, Space Camp.
Oh, yeah.
Did not find its audience, but
it's
another
book
movie.
Of Space Camp.
That's funny. I actually have that book. Yeah. Well, I went to space camp, so that movie was a big deal for me. But yeah, it's definitely a movie that was designed for the children of the 80s to embrace, and it didn't happen. It's another, and unfortunately, it's another Explorers.
So. Yes. So now, are you going to watch Henry?
Yes, I'll watch Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. Why the heck not? I'll get back to you. But now, I promise I'll see it sometime this month.
And Ethan got the love that he's been looking for.
Yay!
Finally.
And if you'd like to send us email, voicemails, whatever you absolutely can, we would encourage it. We'd love getting mail, especially ones that compare us to shows that I think are vastly superior to ours. It feels nice and special.
But if you want to compare us to shows that you don't like, you can do that too.
That's true.
We'll read them. We'll weep, but we'll read them.
We will. Or we'll just have a lot of fun with them. Either way. You can email us at podcast, Ethan, Barry, Dave, or Melissa, all at screengeeks.com. You can also give us a call at 719-553-5664 and leave us a voicemail that way. We've got some business before we get out of here. Just for anyone who doesn't remember, around the country, and I don't know if it's up in your neck of the woods, Ethan, but they're doing a Riff Tracks rebroadcast theatrically of Plan 9 from Outer Space, and there shall be performances, I believe, from the said Mr. Jonathan Colton, who will be playing a song from at the end.
Wonderful.
It shall be fun and crazy. And Barry, what are you doing this Friday night, sir?
Well, thanks to Dave. Dave hooked me up with his celebrity friends, Jamin and Kiowa Winans.
Yes.
Winans. I always say Winans. Winans. These are the creators, in every sense of the word, of Ink, the movie that we have pimped like a golden hoe on this show. We got nothing but love for Ink on this show, and anybody who's seen it understands why. This Friday night, October the 9th, at UCCS in Dwyer, Theater 121, which is the only theater in Dwyer.
Okay.
So you can't miss it. We're showing Ink at 7 o'clock. It's followed by a Q&A with the writer, director, editor, cinematographer, and
composer.
Everything else. And composer, yes. So please be there. It's the theater seats 187 people. I would love for at least 100 people to show up. We'll see.
I don't think it's going to be a problem. But both Jamie and Kyle are coming down. We don't know if any actors are coming down this time.
Because
at the thing down at the Lon Chaney Theater, To have two of the actors come up was really cool. But I'm also going to bring the video camera if we can work out the logistics and videotape the Q&A just because I didn't get to do it at Lon Chaney. That, there were some technical snafus.
No, this is good stuff, too. That was a good show.
It was. It'll be a good time, so we'll get some video up of that, too.
So come, come. This is the event, the movie event of Colorado Springs this year. Come.
Indeed. So, and then next week, we are coming back, and we will be talking about Panic Room. Yep. Not one of the more well-known movies of David Fincher.
Which is a good reason to talk about it.
Exactly. But until then, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
Take it easy.
Here we go. Stop where you rent.
Hey, Tom, it's Bob from the office down the hall. Good to see you, buddy. How have you been? Things have been okay for me, except that I'm a zombie now. I really wish you'd let us in. I think I speak for all of us when I say I understand why you folks might hesitate to submit to our demands. But here's an FYI, you're all gonna die screaming. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes. At an impasse here, maybe we should compromise. If you open up the doors, we'll all come inside and eat your brains. And I don't wanna nitpick, Tom, but is this really your plan? Spend your whole life locked inside a mall. Maybe that's okay for now, but someday you'll be out of food and guns. Then you'll have to make the call. Not surprised to see you haven't thought it through enough. You never had the head for all that bigger picture stuff. But Tom, that's what I do. Slowly, we're not unreasonable. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes. We're at an impasse here. Maybe we should compromise. If you open up the doors, we'll all come inside and eat your brain. Help you, Tom, in any way I can. I sure appreciate the way you're working with me. I'm not a monster, Tom. Well, technically I am. I guess I am. I've got another meeting, Tom. Maybe we could wrap this up. I know we'll get to common ground somehow. Meanwhile, I'll report back to my colleagues who were chewing on the doors. I guess we'll table this for now. I'm glad to see you take constructive criticism well. Thank you for your time. I know we're all busy as hell. And we'll